Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
We have a great show for you this week. We're going to be covering the news, as always. Additionally, the feature of this week is actually something suggested to us by one of our trusty viewers. We have Samantha J. Billinger here from Montana, it appears. She has requested, in her words, let's see, "We had a wonderful show on signatures last week. Can you please do something on blobs and the API?" Well, we certainly can, Samantha. This week we'll be covering the blob API. And Steve, by the way, it says, "P.S., you're dreamy."
Could you read that again? Since you have it written down there, I'm just...
Don't need to.
We've got
to
move on.
We've got to move along in the show.
Uh-huh.
McDreamy. And finally, we'll be wrapping up this week with the tip of the week being on how to get your troubleshooting taken care of in the Windows Azure runtime environment, so when it's up in the cloud, using the service bus. Sometimes there's an error that can occur, and we'll give you a quick tip on how to troubleshoot that and fix it, kind of common occurrences.
And if you want your feedback to appear on a blank piece of paper in front of Ryan, you can always send us a tweet at @CloudCoverShow on Twitter.
No, really, Samantha J. Billinger. Montana.
No, it didn't sound made up at all. So, the news, SQL Azure team has announced some new features that just came online, and they're basically the stuff that we've talked about already that were in labs from Mix 2010. So, support for Mars, alter rename, and application and multi-server management. What is not on this list yet, but is coming soon, is the 50 gigabyte size for databases.
Nice.
So that is going to be coming in June. And if people want to be early adopters of that, there's actually an email address right here in the blog post. So you can just send them some mail and ask them. Bribes are accepted, I believe.
I believe they're encouraged, in fact.
I think they're mandatory.
Mm. The news out of the UK this week from our band of merry DPE evangelists over there, David Griswood and Eric Nelson, is that they are going to be running a self-paced learning course for Windows Azure. So we have a blog post here kind of announcing that. It'll be coming online soon in the next couple weeks. We will update this post with a link to this, of course, and I would encourage everyone to go out, check this out, because it sounds like really great content. And I know for a lot of folks who don't have a lot of time, something that's self-paced is an easy way to kind of do it on the train in the morning or, you know, when you have downtime at lunch, something like that, and get up to speed.
Now, see, Ryan, do you know, it says a six-week period, and then it says self-paced. What's the deal with the 6 weeks? Is it that it's in six modules, or...?
I believe that it's in modules, or it could be that if every module self-destructs after a week, so if you don't finish it...
That's what I was wondering,
yeah.
Was like, is there, I mean...
It's probably self-destructing.
Okay, so be sure you're willing to commit to this before you sign up.
Yeah.
Next on this list, we have an incredibly detailed post by Rob about... uploading files into Windows Azure and how to optimize that. So he's actually done, the cool part is of course all the graphs at the bottom. He's done a whole bunch of testing about how many concurrent uploads can I do, and you know, multi-threaded for different sizes of blobs and
right.
things like that.
And he's compared it to like the defaults and
yeah, so
different
those,
scenarios.
Just what you get there and what,
yeah.
So very cool. So if you're curious about how to really optimize this and squeeze performance out of this, go read this post and see what he came up with.
Actually, it's if you kind of distill it down to its core, it's basically, it sounds like the 1 megabyte block size in parallel seems to be the sweet spot.
Was that the winner?
Yeah, it seems to be the sweet spot for a lot of scenarios. Now, smaller block sizes, as the blob itself gets a little bit smaller, but for any blob of significant size, the 1 megabyte block seems to be really the sweet spot somewhere in there. But
great.
You can see all the graphs and kind of choose your own and tune it. But if you just want to make a general recommendation, this is pretty good.
The graphs have really pretty colors, so I just kind of like looking at them.
But these actually aren't about the blob upload, though. This is like, you know, how popular am I this week? And
right.
These are just
this
just
is hot
random,
or not. Yeah.
Hot or not graphs.
So open data on the OData front. We've been talking about OData here a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty cool. This is basically open sourcing the code for the .NET and the Silverlight client libraries for OData, and it's under the Apache 2.0 license.
Right.
And so you can go get that at odata.codeplex.com. So just making that even more open. And finally, there's a blog post on my blog, so I think, Ryan, you're probably the expert on this. Why don't you
tell
us about
it? Oh, it's
your
blog? I just ran across this randomly. It was some guy. He has great hair, by the way. And I like the badge.
Yeah.
And he was explaining in one of his blog posts on how to filter the event logs in Windows Azure. And it's one of those things that you need to do, actually, when you're setting up the capture for diagnostics. So there's a bunch of different things that you can do. And obviously, monitoring the entire event log can get a little noisy. So if you're interested in only specific sessions of that event log, Steve, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you can filter it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And this guy actually shows how to do that and how he figured it out, what that filter would be, by basically reverse engineering what Windows does internally and stealing that XML.
Looks like cheating.
Yeah.
That's like, what is that? Just opening up the event viewer and getting the XML from there?
It's crazy. Whoever this guy is...
I don't think we should use him as a source anymore.
You should tell him his blog is broken. The tweets aren't working.
Yeah, I know. What's up with that? No tweets filling in.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of the news. Who wants to talk about things that are new when we could talk about things that have been around for a while?
Samantha would like to know about the Blob API this week. She basically said that we did such an awesome job last week with the shared access signatures. She's thirsty for more Blob knowledge.
I didn't remember that in the mail that you originally read.
No, I was distilling it before, and now I'm just reading into it.
Now that's the full. Yeah. All right. Let me go to the whiteboard for this. I'm going to draw like almost nothing here about blobs, but it's important to kind of see that before we go to the code, just to kind of get a feel for what the blob storage kind of hierarchy looks like. And so every storage, every flavor of storage, blobs, tables, and queues, starts with an account at the very top. And this is the account name that you create when you go to the portal. And a shared key, which is a fancy word for a very long password, and everything is sort of under this. So at the top, you have this account. Under that account, you'll have containers. So for blobs, you'll have containers. For tables and queues, you'll have other sorts of things. But you have container one and container two, and under those are going to be a bunch of blobs. Okay, and so. One thing that I want to point out about this is that that's as deep as the hierarchy actually goes. So when you're using blobs, you might give them names like some container slash some directory slash another directory, I can't spell three, slash a blob with an extension or something like that. This is a figment of your imagination. Now, it's useful, so you might choose to do this. You might put those slashes in there. But to the blob storage system, there is a container. And then there's everything else. And that's it. And so this is actually the name of a blob. You've got a blob called 2/3/blob.txt. And so we're going to look at the code, and we're going to see containers, and we're going to see blobs. And we're not going to use sort of that directory structure in there. And there's some stuff in the storage client library that lets you parse things that way. But really all it's doing is treating that slash like a special character. It's not doing anything. There's no real hierarchy within blobs.
You know, an easy way to think about the accounts here, too, is it's really that little name that goes in front of .blob, .core, .windows, .net. And a lot of folks, when they look at it, they get a little confused sometimes about what's a portal concept and what's really a more physical concept. At the account level, you're actually, you have that DNS name that matches to that storage account, and that's that storage account that has the 100 terabyte limit, for instance. And everything Steve's talking about is really under there. So it would be like blob.core or, you know, account.blob.core.windows.net.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's look at this awesome demo that I have. Check it out. Again, my awesome UI skills. I actually spent some time on this one.
I like the yellow background.
I thought yellow, it just makes it clear you're supposed to do something there. Mm-hmm. So this little app, right now it doesn't do anything. You can type a bunch of stuff, and then when you click save, nothing really happens because I haven't implemented anything. And so, great. But what it's going to do is it's going to save the notes that I put here into a blob. And then every time I load this page, I'm going to see what notes were already there, and I get to edit it and whatever. So we're basically going to use a blob to store some simple text. Mm-hmm. So let us, let me actually shut that down and hop over to Visual Studio. Here's the awesome UI that I made, so you're not missing much. It's just right there. And here is my completely empty code behind. So the first thing that I want to do, let me full screen that so it's easier to see, is we want to actually get the contents of the blob and fill in that text box. As you can see, I've already added the namespaces of Microsoft.Windows Azure and Storage Client and Service Runtime under there. The first two are really important for anything you're doing with Storage Client. You'll need both of them because the first one has some useful extension methods. This last one is to get configuration settings, and I'm going to use that so that I can use a configuration setting to say what is the storage account that I'm using.
You really only need that if you're running in Windows Azure. Like, you could have written this website actually in another,
any web host. Wouldn't have used a config setting. I would probably have used, I would have put it in web.config maybe or something like
app
that.
App settings, right.
So let's go add a setting for our data connection string. And connection strings are kind of funny. They're actually just some text, but they're parsed specially by the cloud storage account that we're going to use. So I'm going to say use development storage, and so then I get a connection string that looks like that. We're going to just go onto the portal and use some real storage later. So now that I have that, I can go in here and I can say create a new account. So I'll just say cloud storage account.parse, and then what I'll pass into it is that that connection string. So I'll use role environment to get the configuration setting value. We called it data connection string, and that's going to create my account for me. Now there's another method here off of cloud storage account called from configuration setting, where then you just pass in the config setting. That also uses this setting publisher that basically lets you change the connection string on the fly without causing the whole role instance to recycle.
In some cases, right.
So that's kind of handy if you need that. I'm actually just using this account for just the duration of this method. So I don't expect to need that, so the next time it's going to read that config setting again. So I don't actually have to use that here, so I'm skipping it. I'm just using parse, which is a little simpler and doesn't require you to kind of set that configuration setting publisher. Okay, so from here, we can get blob storage. So we're at the account level, so there's tables, queues, and blobs to be had there, and I'm going to say create a cloud blob client. And then I'm going to get an actual blob, and I'm going to do this by saying get blob reference. And here I'm putting in the path that I want, notes/notes.txt. Remember, the first thing is the container, and then the rest is the name of the blob.
But this doesn't actually get a blob. I mean, it's important to point
right.
out.
This gets, is just a this reference. Gets a reference to a blob. So this next line does the actual work. So we're going to take that blob, and we're going to say download text. Download text is sort of the simplest one of these. So you can actually get a stream. You can actually open a stream. Right. And obviously, there doesn't have to be text here. You could use it for anything else. But we're going to use text. And then we're just going to put it in our text box. And let me build to make sure that we don't have any build breaks. And let's go ahead and run it. But I don't expect it to actually work. Not just because most time that I write code, it doesn't work the first time, but because here I actually know what's going to go wrong. And what's going to go wrong is that container doesn't exist yet, and neither does that blob. So I'm trying to read something that doesn't exist. So now the browser is opening up, and we should actually see an error as we try to read that blob. So here you go. We got a storage client exception. It basically says that container doesn't exist. If the container existed but the blob didn't exist, get a slightly different exception that said the blob doesn't exist. So let's go ahead and stop debugging, and let's handle that situation. So I'm going to put a try-catch around this, and I'm going to catch a storage exception, and I'm going to check to see what the error code is. And if it is container not found, or it's blob not found, then we're going to handle it. Otherwise, we're just going to rethrow that exception so that if something else goes wrong, it still gets bubbled up and handled by whatever our sort of global exception handling is. In my case, nothing. Mm-hmm. And so in here, if it's one of those errors, that just means that we've got to go create the container first. So I'm going to, instead of getting a blob reference, I'm going to get a container reference to notes. I'm going to say create if not exist. So even if it's just the blob that doesn't exist, we're going to do a create if not exist here. That basically just swallows the exception. So if something goes wrong there, it just ignores it and says, all right, the container's already there, so we don't have to worry about it.
There's one thing that might be a little confusing if we look at the code here, and it would probably be worth explaining, is the first get blob reference where you have that notes slash notes text. Mm-hmm. That notes is not the name of the blob in this case. That you're actually referring to that as the container.
Yep.
It would be equivalent if you said blob get container reference notes dot get blob reference notes dot text. Those
exactly.
would be two equivalent things. And in that case, you're already at the container level. But in this case, since you're creating a container named notes down here, that is meant to match up to the get blob
yeah.
reference
this,
up top.
This is just a shorthand, basically, for first getting the container and then getting the blob under it.
Right.
So that's a good point. Always be aware of those two levels of the hierarchy. So here we actually got a reference to the container itself, and we said create if not exist. I'm also going to set permissions on here because we're gonna use this later. So I'm going to give it new blob container permissions. And in there, I'm going to say public access equals blob container public access type dot blob. So what this a little bit of a long-winded sentence here does is it takes that container and it sets it for public read access to the blobs within the container.
Yep.
So the two flavors, it can either be just the blobs or it can also be for listing the contents or whatever. But here I'm basically saying anything that's in there, it's okay if someone just does an HTTP get and just pulls that data down.
So but they won't
it's
be able to
publicly
they
readable.
They won't be able to list the blobs.
They won't be able
the
to list with it. They'll need to know the name of the blob already.
Right.
No particular reason for me to set it that way except so that we could talk about it. So I've set the permissions for public read access for the blob.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got to actually create the blob. So I already have a reference to it. Remember, this didn't actually do anything but give me sort of a named object that refers to that blob. And I'm going to say upload text string.empty. So I'm just going to put something blank in there. So what we have now is we have some code that tries to download the text. If for some reason it can't, that they're not there, it will create the container. If it's not already there, it'll set it for public access. And then it will create that blob with an empty string inside it. And so now we should F5, and we should not see an error because we should be creating that empty blob, and then the text box will just sort of stay empty because we're not setting it to anything.
Right.
So there we go. We got that. Still can't do anything because we still can't save. Okay. So the next step is to fill in save. And save is going to look fairly familiar. I'm going to shorthand it a little bit. So I'm going to say parse that same thing, get configuration setting value data connection string, and then I'm just going to do dot create blob client dot get blob reference notes notes dot text dot upload text the contents of the text box. So that's it.
Bam.
That's pretty easy, right? Upload text is sort of a handy, lets you avoid sort of having to figure out how to encode the text into the right format. And,
right, and deal with streams,
it.
Right?
Yep. So now I should be able to type something here, quite literally, and save. And hey, to really prove it, let's like refresh the page. Okay, so now I'm refreshing and we're still seeing something there. I've just realized something we should probably do is we should set the content type on the blob. Actually, forgot to do that in the section where we're creating it. Let's just write a little temporary code here that's just going to say, actually, you know what? We can do it here. Let's just do it each time. So we're going to get the blob. We're going to say blob.properties. And the properties are a bunch of things that you can set here, and we're just going to use content type. So these are really sort of the headers, because the blob API is fundamentally REST.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to set it to text/plane. And then we're going to upload the text. So this time, every time we upload the text, we're going to set the content type text plane. The reason I'm doing that is because I'm about to show how to sort of just browse directly the blob. And I always want to make sure it has the right content type. By default, it'll be blank, and IE won't know exactly how to handle it.
And it'll try to download it.
Exactly. So I'm just going to set the content type to text/plane. So the other thing that I want to do is I want to enable that link. If people caught it, there was this little download the notes link. And it didn't work because I haven't actually set the URL for it yet. So I'm going to do that here. I'm just going to say, take that link, set the navigate URL to the blob's URI, and I need a string form of it, so I'm going to take the absolute URI from there. So that's it. And since I set the container to public permissions, and I've set the blob type to plain text, I should be able to just click that button and kind of view the results.
Uh-huh.
So when this opens up, I'm first going to save something again just so that we make sure that we set the blob content type correctly. Something else. I like how I correct my spelling in the garbage text I'm typing in, just in case.
It's important to get right.
And now that I've saved it, I can click Download Notes. And look at this URL. This is local blob storage. 127.0.0.1:10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the local version of the storage system that I'm running here. So the fact that I said use development storage means that I got that as the URL. This is the account because locally, instead of going in the URL, it goes sort of after it. And then here's my container, notes, and notes.txt, which is the name of the blob.
Right.
And so now we have some basic functionality there. Let me point out a problem with what we've done. Let's say I'm ready to make a change. And meanwhile, Ryan, because he loves to do this, opens up this web page himself, and he makes another change really fast. And he clicks Save. And I come back here, and I'm ready to make my change. I click Save. Well, what do you think happened? We both made changes to this thing at the same time.
Last one wins.
So if I go check out the truth, this is the actual file. My change is in there. Ryan's got lost.
Boom.
And we may not like that behavior. So you might want to say, only edit that if it hasn't changed in the meantime.
Right.
And we can actually handle that pretty easily using conditional updates with blobs. So here, where I was just about to upload the text, we're going to do something similar to what we did to handle the case where the blob doesn't actually exist yet. Which is, we're going to catch the exception. And if the error code is that the condition isn't met. So we'll see exactly what the
in Rastafarian or terms, this is the if not match header and if match headers, right?
Yeah, and actually, so we're going to explicitly sort of put that on here. I'm doing things a little bit out of order. We're going to basically say if its condition failed, do one thing. Otherwise, again, we're just going to throw it on. And the way that that's ever going to happen is because of the way we upload the text. So we're going to use a different form of this upload text. On this one, we actually have to say which encoding we're using. I'm just going to use ASCII. And then I get to put some other options on here. So I'm going to create some new blob request options. And I'm going to use access condition here and say access condition if match. And now the question is what to put in here. How do I know that it's the same one that I read before?
Mm-hmm.
Let me put that there so we don't get a squiggly line yet. So what I'm going to do is when I read the blob originally, I'm going to save this value. So etag is just a hidden field on my form. And I'm just going to save the etag that I got.
Right.
So when I download the text, I'm going to update the etag. I'm going to just store that on the page in a hidden field in the form. So when the form gets posted back, all I need to do is say, as long as it matches etag.value. If it doesn't work, I have a little label. I'm going to set the text and say,
someone got there first.
Error, Ryan's messing things up. And make it visible. So... Let's do one more thing.
Second, so that way all my stuff, the most important
stuff. So your stuff actually gets
my
in.
My stuff shows up.
I'm going to say down here that don't even read the blob if the error label is visible. So I'm basically saying, as long as it's not visible, go ahead and update the blob contents. That way, when I get an error, I don't just like lose everything that I had. The notes are still there. So now we should be able to run, and we should be able to do the same thing that we did before, but this time we should get a nice little error because we've learned how to use a conditional update to do that test.
And this is a good form of concurrency control, obviously. I mean, this is, in practice, we're uploading text here, but this is obviously pretty important. If you have a blob that's being versioned, you have multiple clients reading it, it's an easy way to keep track of concurrency.
Yep. So and it's called optimistic concurrency. That's the flavor of the, it's set it as long as nothing's changed. So the optimism is, well, I sort of hope nothing changed. And if it did, just fail it and let me do something else.
The reverse of that is you can also do a download that says only download if it has changed.
Right.
Right. So that's the
caches do and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. So here I have Ryan's change ready to go and Steve's change ready to go. Ryan is going to hit save first. Good for you, Ryan, being so fast. I'm going to hit save second. And then, oh, Ryan's messing things up. So now I've gotten the error because of that. So the only other thing that I really want to do with this is I want to use actual cloud storage. So let's just make that last change and then
That's probably pretty difficult, I would imagine.
It is an extremely complicated process, and so we'll just see how far we can get with it here. But we might have to do a couple follow-up.
Do another episode?
Like maybe two episodes, probably.
How do you retrieve your account details?
Yeah. So it's tough. I gotta admit. So I'm gonna go to the Windows Azure portal. I'm gonna go look at my stuff.
You can also get it through the storage through the API, the service management API.
That is true, Ryan. I could have just opened up PowerShell to do this.
You could have PowerShelled it.
But I didn't. Okay, and I've created something already. See this notes.blob.core.windows.net? That's what Ryan was saying. That's my account, notes, and it's just what I typed in before. Here's the access key. Before you all go try to do it, I am going to change the keys before this goes live.
But only the primary key. The secondary key will still
secondary
work.
Key will totally work. Okay, and I'm going to go back to Visual Studio, and I'm going to change my connection string, and I'm going to say, here's some storage credentials. So instead of local development storage, I'm going to enter some real credentials, and I'm going to say notes, and there's the big long key. And we will save that and run it again. So, I don't know, maybe we won't have to do a couple follow-up weeks on that. Maybe I'm speaking too soon. Let's wait and make sure that actually...
This could blow up for all
you. Let's make sure it works before I do that.
You use notes a lot. You know, the name of the counts notes, the containers names notes, the file name is notes.
It's kind of crazy. And there's some stuff here from where I was testing before, but notes in the cloud. Notes. Just because Ryan likes that I keep using it. I'm going to save it. Now look when we download notes. Hey, we have a different URI. It says notes.blob.core.windows.net. So the first notes was the account name. Then it says /notes. That notes is the container name. And then it says...
The publicly marked.
/notes.txt. Yeah, public, which is why we can read this. And then it says /notes.txt, which is the actual name of the blob.
So pop quiz, if I wanted to keep the container public...
Yes.
And still view that file. How could I do that, Steve?
If you want to keep the container private,
and
still view this file. I don't know, but we should ask, what was her name again?
Samantha
watched...
She recommended watching that Shared Access Signatures
thing, which was the last show that we did, actually. So I also have this deployed at notesdemo.cloudapp.net. I'm probably going to tear this down, so don't try to go there. But hey, look, it says the same stuff that we had here. So just to prove sort of round-tripping... I can go ahead and save it here. If we go back here, we're on the local machine, and I just have to reload it. I hit back, so it didn't do it. So reload it, and you see the round-tripping stuff from there. And so that, in a nutshell, is the storage client library for blobs, basically just getting that set up and using it for some simple things. We might come back to this, I think, in the future and talk about some more complex things that you can do, like parallel uploads, setting the retry policy, and I think this will do for now, but we should probably come back and revisit this, and we're planning on doing some shows about tables and cues down the road too, and sort of round out the rest of the story.
With what you covered here, I'd say you got about 80% coverage of the things, the most common things you're going to do. Now, obviously, there's some asynchronous overloads you can use in there as well.
Yep.
And there's other features, but a little more advanced.
You'll find them with IntelliSense. Like, a lot of those are easy enough. Once you know the kind of object you need, how to get the reference to the blob, you can just let IntelliSense kind of show you some of the other methods, like upload file or upload stream, and the begin upload, those variants which do the asynchronous operation. So a lot of that is fairly discoverable, so I think people will have a good grounding here.
That's great. That's a great tip.
So
It comes this time in every show where we must brave the waters and declare what the tip of the week is. And to introduce the tip of the week, we always struggle with how we can confound our editor and cause him to threaten to quit. This week, I think we wanted to see something that was just completely random. What was it again? I know there are penguins involved.
Yeah.
That's why we had the desktop, right?
There was, like we wanted to see a ship, a broken down sort of
a rusted out ship.
With some penguins singing.
Or a mariachi band.
Why not everything?
Why not?
Just all of it. Because without that, it wouldn't really be tip of the week.
No.
So
what says the tip of the week, like a rusted out frigate, penguins, and a mariachi band?
Yeah, nothing really. That's it.
That's like a Hallmark card, really.
All right, are we ready?
Yep.
Here is the tip of the week.
Okay, the tip this week is how to troubleshoot, or some of the common things you might run into when you're running the service bus within a Windows Azure role. So the tips that we've talked about in the past have been to, you know, you always need to copy local on assemblies that are not in the cloud. And in this case, actually, the assemblies for the service bus are not in the cloud. Those assemblies need to be uploaded as part of your package, so that requires you to set copy local. Now, you might do this, and you might think to yourself, aha, I have fixed the number one issue of why I have that initializing, stopping, and restarting behavior. And then you say to yourself, it's still not working, I'm getting this error. Well, it turns out there's some other settings that you might need to enable. Now, it depends a little bit on how you're creating your service bus connection. If you do it all in code, turns out you're gonna be okay. If you use the configuration file, however, there are some settings you need to copy in locally. Now, Steve has opened up his local machine.config, which is where we've installed the AppFabric SDK. And if you look at towards the bottom of the file, you'll see the service model section. And really, you just want to kind of highlight through there and look for everything that says .servicebus in it. What that is a declaration to declare those config settings that are going to appear in your app.config or your web.config. Those settings themselves are classes, and in order to reference those, it has to know what assembly to pull. Well, that definition is kept in your machine.config, or if you don't have access to the machine.config, which you don't in the Windows Azure VM, what you need to do is copy those locally. So, easy thing to do, copy the whole section, cut and paste it, the whole service model section. If you want to be very precise, just go ahead and find everything, highlight everything that says service bus, and just copy paste that into your app config or web config. And there you go. Your config settings that are declared now will work. They'll be able to resolve.
Great.
All right.
Sounds easy enough.
It is. It's super simple to do, very straightforward. So that's it for this week. Next week, we will, as always, have another great show for you. And until next time, thanks.
Thanks.